Welcome back to the Health Longevity Secret Show with Dr. Robert Lufkin. Today, we look at how nutrition can prevent and even reverse chronic diseases with two leaders in the field. David Rambo is the founder and CEO of Simplex Health. Dr. Avi Gurwitz is chairman of the Department of Pediatrics and medical director at the Pediatric Urgent Care Center at Holy Redeemer Hospital. He is also chief medical officer at Simplex Health. Ari received his medical degree from the State University of New York Downstate Medical Center College of Medicine. Before we begin, I would like to mention that this show is separate from my teaching and research roles at the medical school, which I am currently affiliated. It is part of my continuing effort to bring quality, evidence-based information about health and longevity to the general public. Now, please enjoy this interview with David Rambo and Dr. Avi Gurwitz. Dr. Avi Gurwitz, David Rambo, welcome to Health Longevity Secrets.
Thank you for having us. Yes, thank you.
Great. I think we all three share a common vision that I know it's your vision of reimagining the conventional healthcare model with progressive, evidence-based, clinically proven protocols that can prevent and even reverse the world's most disruptive diseases and chronic conditions. And before we dive into that, perhaps we'll just take a moment and you could tell us about how each of you came to be involved in this fascinating space.
Great. I'll take that one first, Av. So again, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having us part of this. We're really excited to share our story and be part of this change. So Simplex was formed primarily out of a personal experience that I had dealing with my own diagnosis at age 34. I was diagnosed a type 2 diabetic with an A1C of 11.8, a fasting glucose of around 350, following a couple year period of moving along the conventional care paradigm where I'd been feeling sluggish in 2009, was addressing some thyroid conditions that led to another host of medications. You know, from there, before I knew it, I was on compounded T3, T4, and some other medications. And then finally, the diagnosis came in June 1st, 2012. And I was, treated accordingly. My primary care physician, set me up with medications to help me manage this condition. It was around 13 months later where I was introduced by a physician who's no longer in practice now, but was in the concierge side of the field, who had helped my son with a skin condition that he had had plaguing him his whole life, eczema since he was 4 years old, despite creams and the conventional treatments and stuff and the antibiotics. And in a matter of 2 weeks, just from adjusting his food intake, all of that was plaguing him was gone. So that got my attention at that point. And through just meeting with this physician and sharing my diagnosis, she had introduced this concept that what I was dealing with, type 2 diabetes, was something that she could help with. And I don't want to say I dismissed it. I didn't take it as seriously at first, but I immersed myself into some of the work that Dr. Lustig had done in the space. He's actually a advisor with Simplex now, and went on a pathway to really lean in to this idea that this condition that I had been living with and managing for 13 months was eminently reversible. And at that point, about 4 months after applying a food as medicine approach, I was off all five of my prescription medications. I had lost 50 pounds and my life was just changed. Serendipitously, I met Dr. Gurwitz being in the, and it, ironically, I was in the wellness space. I met Dr. Gerwitz at a health club I had an ownership interest in at the time. And him and I became friends, and he had been following along that journey with me. And then, learning about, we were discussing the tenets of functional medicine, and he being in the space that he was in, was seeing the need for change. And we just, brought these ideas together, where we were going to do something about it and bring, the model of care that I had to as many people as possible. So that was the idea behind where Simplex started, is that we were going to be the execution behind the idea of this food as medicine model.
Yes, food as medicine is definitely a very powerful concept, and one theme we're hearing repeatedly from our experts in this interview series. Several people have commented that the single most powerful lifestyle choice we can make in our lives is managing our nutrition. And some people even go so far as to say, and that is by removing sugars and refined carbohydrates from our diet, or at least decreasing them. But nutrition, is a key area. And I'm excited to hear about your approach to nutrition at Simplex Health. Specifically, we hear a lot of things about choices in our diet, how much we eat, when do we eat, what types of food do we eat, and even macronutrient sequencing. So what is your approach to that?
So we set out to be to challenge the status quo of conventional dietetics. And our model is based upon using registered dietitians, so that way we can work alongside, well-intended physicians that maybe don't have the education, training, or time to help their patients implement nutrition changes that challenge the conventional dietetic paradigm. So we learned, and just through and through myself following the work of the thought leaders in the space of the carbohydrate insulin model there, that we were doing this all wrong, and that conventional dietetics was really just making everything worse. But at the same time, for our model to work and provide the accessibility and remove the barriers to entry to work with us, we wanted to use the conventional insurance model. So that's why we're set out to find dietitians that were philosophically in line with us, that were willing to follow a set of protocols that were challenging, to challenge what they were taught in school. So what our current therapies focus around, and I'll just speak to one of them that is probably our most effective. The tenets of it are, it's an insulin optimization protocol, and its two components are a low insulin diet, okay, that was developed alongside Avi and Dr. Lustig in our clinical team, and increasing amounts of intermittent fasting. Okay. And we use, so we have clinical guidelines that we provide to our practitioners to guide them through that therapy with a patient based upon some other biobehavioral clues that we learn from their blood work, that we get back, that we have access to through, the EHR that we're a part of with the health systems that we partner with. And we all, their current status in terms of their understanding of the role of nutrition, what barriers there are, what their cultural persuasion is. So we fine tune an approach for them that helps them, look at that, that insulin resistance, that disease pathology all the way through. And then we apply one of our 9 therapies to that.
It's certainly a challenge, I guess, in multiple ways. In my medical training, which was a long time ago, but I'm also teach at medical schools now, so I do see the medical education that students and residents are getting in nutrition. I have to say it's better than what I had, but it's still. Given the fact that nutrition is such a powerful factor in health, I think we could still do a lot better in our medical school education with nutrition. And then, as you say, the other challenge is sort of differing views about what the ideal nutrition is. And some dietitians and other health experts have dramatically different views about the best way to approach chronic disease and even what constitutes a healthy diet. So your affiliation with with Rob Lustig is a strong credential, and he's of course one of the thought leaders in this area and has some great ideas on it. What diseases are you looking to address initially, and what do you find these nutrition approaches most effective for in your experience?
So I'll take this, Dave. So I work in the acute side of medicine. I see more of the injuries and, you know, the ER side of things. And what I started noticing is, you know, people that come in over and over and over again with BMIs beyond numbers that we can say. And it's almost as if it seems like the world has accepted that if you get older, you get diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia. It's just because that's what happens. You hit 40, 50, and you just, this is normal. And, you know, that sort of got me into a deeper dive into, well, it's not normal. Looking back, you know, yes, acute injuries and illnesses like infections killed us, but the ones that live didn't die. And the ones that currently live long don't die of the same things we do, which is cardiovascular disease, et cetera. And so, you know, what ties this all together? What makes us different? What makes us, or countries that adopt our lifestyle, develop our diseases? What's the common theme? And it wasn't fat, because if you look at the Eskimos, they eat fat and protein. There isn't a carb to be grown out on the ice. It wasn't a specific food. Different groups of people eat different foods. But what seemed to be the common theme, and the evidence is really bearing this out, is processed foods and refined carbohydrates. And the reason why I lumped them together is because both of them together increase insulin output. And if everything we do revolves around improving your insulin sensitivity or decreasing insulin. We think, and I think others will agree, that insulin is a prominent hormone, amongst others, that is driving the host of what we call chronic disease. But chronic is a misnomer. Chronic is basically saying you have a disease that's treatable, but rather than treat it, we're going to manage it and we're going to name it chronic. So therefore, you'll accept the fact that we're going to manage it, as opposed to say it's not chronic. It's an acute thing that happened over time that can be reversed by the same things that caused it, which is nutrition. You spoke earlier about nutrition being so powerful. We think of health in the five pillars: nutrition, physical activity, sleep, stress, and spiritual well-being. And I would say 90% of your health comes from nutrition. You don't see animals running on treadmills or sprinting on races or lifting weights. What you see them is eating the food they're supposed to eat at the amount they're supposed to eat it. And so we live in a world where ultra-processed and refined carbohydrate foods and foods that really questionably are even foods at all are eaten all the time. And so the basic tenet and the protocols obviously are individualized and will work towards different people, is eat whole food, real food, as close to where it came from as possible, and eat it as a meal instead of consistently eating. Allow your body to heal during periods that you have finished supplying your body with energy. We have the capability to store energy as opposed to like oxygen, which we need to constantly get. So we don't need to constantly take in energy. We just need to take it in to provide nutrition and then allow body to use it and heal it and grow and do things as such. But that's not how our society. We have three meals a day, three snacks in between meals, something before bed, something in the middle of the night when you wake up hungry. When are you ever going to utilize that energy? If even healthy energy at all. So that's sort of the overarching theme that we espouse, and I think Robert Lustig, well, yourself too, espouse. And I think that is the future, in the sense that diabetes, cardiovascular disease are an end result of insulin resistance that happened 10, 15, 20 years earlier. In fact, as early as pediatrics. And it's absolutely reversible, or not even reversible. It could be mitigated before it becomes a disease. And that education is just not there yet on both lay people and, more importantly, physicians. And that's what we're hoping to get to, is to at least start with the physicians and the interested lay people to start a movement to say, we don't have to see a ballooning healthcare cost of 18% of our GDP. We can bring that down because 90% of our costs are chronic disease management. How about spending a little more or less money on chronic disease reversal or mitigation and make people healthier and save tons of money?
So there's been, and again, you know, medical nutrition therapy has been around for, you know, decades, just been underutilized primarily because it was really failing. Not only was the advice that was being doled out, but the nature of helping patients support them in behavior change wasn't there. The tools weren't there, right? So you had this very episodic kind of experience with a registered dietitian. They would give you a very strict meal plan, wouldn't give you a rhyme or reason. It was based on all of these, you know, this outdated dogma. And they'd say, good luck, see you in 6 weeks, right? And that was what the conventional outpatient medical nutrition therapy experience looked like. So you're a physician, you're staring at a patient who they know, right? The best intervention is, you know, eat better and exercise, right? But the execution on that was horrible. Now we have these digital tools, which are exciting, but Simplex believes in the potent importance of human connection with the addition of technology. Now, conventionally, anytime you add human connection, you add costs, especially when you're helping people through a program that is a lifestyle change that has an accountability component that's necessary to help people get through that, as well as an education and implementation component. So we have a wealth of resources, but our plan doesn't just include meetings with a dietitian. There's health coaching support in between. There's the education. There's the, hey, let's go through your pantry together and don't throw out everything. Let me educate you on the things that cause these insulin increases that now we can come virtually into that patient's pantry that you never would have been able to do before. And something that very difficult, not everyone really just wants to AI that experience yet. So the human connection, the reason why we're getting the outcomes that we're getting, and the lasting implication is because not only are we rewiring the hormones that, you know, drive, you know, those toxic cravings essentially, but we're also, they're coming out with an understanding of the role of this hormone insulin. You know, and that was really one of our primary goals. It was so easy when I reversed my diabetes. I was like, this is almost too scary to talk about. How in a matter of 4 months, okay, I was able to eliminate all of that and no longer be a diabetic. And the fact that it was harder, it make more sense why more people aren't doing it. But again, I became more obsessed than I expect our patients to become in the research. But in a short period of time, we can dramatically impact the lives, and they're learning about insulin. So they get to this place where they're not owned by cravings. They're not owned by confusion. We separate that friction. They can live a life essentially when they get insulin sensitivity back, where they know what's going to potentially send them back into a bad, you know, into a place they don't want to be, but they're able to regain control of their life in a way that's really exciting long-term, not just short-term.
Yeah. Thanks, David. That's such an important concept. And Avi also that of insulin being fundamental to chronic diseases. I mean, I still have colleagues who should know better, but they conceptualize diabetes as a disease of glucose. But of course, if you wait till the glucose is elevated or the A1C goes up, you're already 10 years into the game. And monitoring insulin, although it's less convenient now, but it's really the way to go. Do you guys, or what's your approach to monitoring insulin just with blood tests, I presume, right? Following along periodically throughout the course of their treatment?
Yeah. So the problem has been, and the reason why the ADA hasn't recommended this, and I believe will be standard of care in the next 5 to 10 years, is because insulin assays are not standardized across labs. And that's been a big bugaboo, as was A1C. A1C used to never be used to be diagnosed diabetes. It was the cardinal rule. You can monitor patients because trends were important, but you couldn't diagnose diabetes. And then the assays were all standardized, and now A1Cs are used for diagnosis, for diabetes, pre-diabetes. That's what's happening in the world of insulin right now. So, you know, Quest, for instance, has an insulin resistance score that has been correlated to the Cleveland through the Cleveland Clinic as a to the gold standard of insulin resistance, and they're trying to show that. But beyond going through specific companies, the idea is that health thought leaders are coming on board with the need to standardize insulin resistance, whether it's measuring intact insulin versus C-peptide or using mass spectroscopy and coming up with a score. But when you're born, your insulin is near zero when you're fasting because you don't need much and it should be there. And so if you want to use a so while we don't have yet the standardized insulin, we definitely monitor insulin levels, and healthy insulin's on a non-standardized scale should be about under 5 fasting. Between 5 and 10, you're getting up there. Beyond 10 to 15, you're pretty insulin resistant. And that's a number I can show a patient and say, look, you're taxing your pancreas. There's going to be a day in the very near future where you can't make any more insulin and your sugar will rise by the mere fact that your insulin is plenty there. It's just not sensitive. Your receptors are not acting to that. And so, and that's because of the diet that you did, your lifestyle, something you can then change, and your pancreas will stop being that stressed, as opposed to waiting longer and longer, getting beta cell dysfunction and beta cell destruction and having long-term damage, kidney damage, eye damage, all this stuff that comes along, cardiovascular disease. And again, a lot of this is reversible, but some of it is not. And so why not start earlier? Why not start off when I can show you insulin's rising and you're already getting damage from the hormone insulin and bring it down? And it can come down pretty quickly, because if you make a dietary change, your insulin goes from 15 to 7 and you feel better and you lost some weight, you never even had to go down that path to ever become pre-diabetic and diabetic. Besides the money that's saved, the life that's changed, that is the right way to practice medicine.
Yeah, there's so much interest in biological clocks versus chronological clocks for aging. Like, we've had people talk about DNA methylation clocks for consumers and Steve Horvath's clock and other ways of measuring health risk and longevity overall. One way to think of it, based on what you're saying, Avi, is and one, if you want one blood test as a biological clock, how about a fasting insulin? And that will give you a window into where you are with insulin resistance and overall risk for chronic diseases, for all the way from Alzheimer's, stroke, heart attack.
I don't have the data, but I guarantee you people look at me and go, "Why? You've been practicing medicine for 15 years. You look so young." And I say, well, my fasting insulin is under 1. So I'm not saying that I have the empirical data, but I guarantee you that if you measure insulin across generations, it would correlate to some sort of longevity of life, whether it be due to chronic disease and earlier mortality or morbidity, or just overall health, because insulin was never meant to be that high. No other species of animals, no other healthy population eats whole foods has insulin levels the way we do.
And now, fascinatingly, we're finding that for longevity, all the nutrient sensing hormones, you know, AMP kinase, sirtuins, mTOR, are all based along the same things that insulin influences, and also insulin-like growth hormone. So they're growth factor. They're similar. Insulin is really key.
It's to growing our health you. And longevity. It's growing. Yeah. It's literally a growth hormone. It's aging you literally by growing constantly. It's like having growth hormone all the time. You know, if you're anabolic all the time, you are going to age and grow quicker and live shorter. And hence the studies of intermittent fasting in animals showing longevity. There's some combination here, whether it's the intermittent fasting or it's the hormonal changes that happen with it, but insulin is key here.
Yeah. Yeah. What other tools do you find useful for patient monitoring or devices at Simplex Health that help you manage their nutrition?
So one of our, we're actually currently in the middle of our own proprietary technology build. We're using, you know, a white labeled EHR engagement platform right now, but we've kind of at a point where as a company, we're going to move to our own platform just to enable us to kind of create that experience is that, that's unique to Simplex. But we do, our platform does have device integration. And for example, our gestational diabetic population, which is, an increasingly, you know, growth sector for us, we're monitoring blood sugars for that population and looking at abnormalities and sharing that back with the referring provider, essentially being an extension of that practice. So we're using that in that way as well. And then other metrics, patients can, you know, log on when their health coach, you know, either, you know, bumps them or certain periods during before we see them to record a metric. And then our team on the back end can go in and import data from our referring physicians' lab results into our platform. So that way we're able to get as much of a total picture in terms of, hey, how is this patient doing during the intervention? And then, you know, a year out, just to ensure that what we're doing is really lasting, not temporary.
Do you find continuous glucose monitors useful in your practice?
So I've used, and as part of a beta, I've used a CGM. I think there's a lot of insights into that. We have not made that readily as part of for all of our patients right now because it is, the expense of securing a CGM for a 1 month. So our workaround for that is that we're developing a pathway for patients if they wanted to, they could kind of, you know, they can use a more conventional just glucose reader after we give them some challenge foods, just so we can see how they respond to that. And then that's how we can get a little bit more precision-like in their therapy. So that's what we do, but we have not incorporated yet CGMs that's on our pathway, but the cost has been, it's coming down and that's exciting. And there's a lot of new providers that are offering that. And those are interesting potential partners for us as well too. But we have not had, you know, broad adoption of those within our practice.
And I would say that, and I might be stepping the gun because it doesn't exist yet, but from my understanding, there's going to be wearables that will be monitoring glucose that, you know, we can tie into them that would give us steps, sleep, and all the other things that they do. But if they can monitor glucose, we just now added a powerful tool. I mean, you already have a single EKG lead on an Apple Watch. So that might make it more accessible. And this is where technology meets the road in the sense that technology is only helpful for what you do about it. And the education and the knowledge is key. And if we're asking someone to make a behavioral change, say, you know what, get rid of soda, get rid of processed food, that's a big ask of people who've been doing that for 30, 40, 50 years. And that's why there's the human component of nutrition counseling. But at the end of the day, if you are empowered to understand why, you're more likely to stick with it down the road, even if you're not perfect. You know, you had your soda once in a while, but you're going to think the next time, I'm drinking soda, my insulin's spiking. If you think that, we've made progress.
Yeah.
Because it's going to start saying, well, that's too much insulin for me, instead of saying that's too much sugar. And that's the education. And then you pair that with technology that shows the results. And hopefully that's something that has changed the person forever.
Yeah,
getting that information into the hands of the patients about their glucose levels on a continuous basis will be game-changing. And of course, Apple Computer has famously patented a Raman spectroscopy tool that goes through the skin for interstitial glucose, which is fine, which some optimistic people are hoping that it will be announced on this September's Apple Watch. And we can always hope.
That would be exciting.
Yeah, that Raman spectroscopy is just, I mean, it's just technology earth shattering. I mean,
and the Android phone manufacturers have access to similar technology. So experts are saying that when one Apple has it, Android will have it either simultaneously or shortly thereafter. So we're in for some exciting times now. Mm-hmm. Continuous insulin monitors, maybe further off.
Yeah,
but
I think standardizing insulin, I think is coming out there. I think the ADA will be forced, with the overwhelming amount of evidence that's going to come out over time, to recommend screening for insulin resistance, because there is a CPT code for it, but there's no test. So how do you have a CPT code without a test? You know, if you write, oh, someone's insulin resistant, you're basing it based on what? An insulin level? Well, technically, there is no insulin level that says you are resistant. They're just general themes. But now the industry is standardizing it. Now this matches a diagnosis. Now the question becomes, what's the therapy? It's not pharmacological. There is no pharmacological treatment for insulin resistance.
You can't give people insulin.
No, you can't be like, well, you're insulin resistant, let me give you some more insulin, right?
The mistaken therapy for diabetes.
Right. We made that mistake. Yeah, we made that mistake down the road, but we're not going to make that mistake before we even got there. So there, the treatment is non-pharmacological. It's lifestyle. And we're ready. We're ready for that change that's coming.
That's so important. And the way you're approaching it with Simplex Health, the tools are very powerful, but the human side, like you say, David, is especially effective, I think. Could you talk for us a little bit about the patient experience and how that human connection works for them at Simplex Health?
Sure. So a typical encounter with us starts with a conversation with their physician. Our business model is to work with health systems that are interested in the value-based care model, right? That where there's an alignment of interest to look at how to help this patient achieve the best outcomes. And so what predominantly our work comes from referring physicians where there's a clinical outcome or a clinical metric that comes up that nutrition therapy would be an appropriate intervention. We get that referral into our office. We contact that patient. We answer questions about how Simplex takes a little bit of a different approach than conventional dietetics and what they think they know about dietetics. Okay, because usually everyone comes with some information. So, you know, we usually will spend a decent amount of time, about 10, 15 minutes, talking about our approach. Then we'll go to verify their insurance eligibility to make sure that this is at, you know, as little to no cost as possible, just to eliminate that barrier to entry for those patients. The first encounter will then be with a registered dietitian. A registered dietitian will, you know, have ingested their intake paperwork, will talk about that person's history, what their goals are, what condition, you know, they're looking to treat, and then obviously identify barriers. And then there'll be some goals set with that patient in advance of the next visit. And during that time, we have most often than not, we're going to help that patient start to get over their addiction to processed foods and sugar that they don't know that they have. So there's an education component, there's resources and materials to help support them through making impactful, meaningful changes between now and their next visit, if you will, where we would then prescribe maybe a more intense therapy. We like to say our approach is aggressive but achievable. We don't like to, you know, the idea of everything in moderation and all of that, you know, systemically, if there's a problem with processed foods, we're going to help them get over it as quickly as possible to help them reverse that condition. So the health coach would engage with the patient in between visits from an accountability perspective there. If they've connected their device and we can respond to some of that feedback that we're getting in between visits, that will happen with the health coach. If the patient has a a complex diagnosis or on multiple medications, that's where medical advisor, Dr. Avi, will get involved with that patient, and maybe we'll work in partnership with that referring patient's physician. Our model is not take the patient over. Our model is to work in harmony with the provider. All of our chart notes are sent back to the prescribing physician in between, so that way we're in sync with that provider. We'll let the patient know that our therapies are pretty powerful. If they're on insulin, if they're on some sort of medication there, that they'll want to, you know, inform their doctor that, that they're working with us in this regard. And again, we'll provide them that documentation as well. And then from there, it's really meeting them where they're at, right? And if they need, it's kind of like reading a good book. It's like you've read a book on this, you're inspired to do it, but like, what do I do next, right? And that's what we find our patients kind of where we shine, because they're not alone on that journey, right? So there's actionable steps. There's, hey, what do I need to buy at the grocery store? Or what's my plan for the week going to be based upon what I currently have available, my budget, so forth and so on. So that's where we customize that plan for the patient. And you know this, that after a couple of days and in little as 10 days, you can begin to shape shift cravings from that are toxic into something, you know, that is a better choice. So it happens in a surprisingly amount of time. They'll shed some of that inflammation that's carrying that water weight. The patients will experience a decent amount of success, which, you know, inspires more of that behavior. And then so between additional visits with the dietitian and the health coach in between, we're just providing those emotional accountability and also that practical accountability along the way via video visits, chatting with us along the way.
Yeah, just some logistics. As we've talked about these chronic, quote, chronic diseases, stroke, heart attack, dementia, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, even some types of cancers are relatively late manifestations of a smoldering underlying metabolic inflammatory insulin-driven condition. For patients entering your program, is it necessary that they have a diagnosis of a hypertension or a other type of manifestation, or can they just be sort of healthy, normal people come in and just say, I want to get healthier so I don't have these chronic diseases?
Yeah, we're open to, here's the thing. Everyone can use the education and the treatment. So, okay. You know, if you already have a disease, we will work with you to tailor not only to reverse the overall inflammatory metabolic derangement, but also specifically tailoring to your current disease process. So, for instance, if you're diabetic, we're going to really hone in on trying to, you know, make you insulin sensitive as quickly as possible while minding the fact that you might be on insulin and need to monitor that sugar. But if you come in and you're otherwise healthy, but your BMI is 30, we're going to say, well, you're not really healthy, but you're in a place where you're easily reversible. And if you truly come in and you say, listen, I'm 20 years old, I'm perfectly fine, my BMI is fine, I'm active, I eat whole foods, then we're going to say, all right, we're just here to give you education. So that as you do get older and life gets stressful, these are the choices you should make. So there isn't anyone that can't benefit from education and behavioral treatment. It's a matter of where they are in their journey and their health as to how intense and what the protocol would be.
Okay. Yeah, that's great information. And I understand that in talking to you earlier that insurance will oftentimes cover the cost of this. So there may be no out-of-pocket cost for the patients, but that'll be determined on a case-by-case basis, I understand. The other question for our audience is, do you accept patients outside the United States, or is this currently a U.S. program only?
Right now, this is a U.S. program only.
Okay. Great. In the last few minutes, what I'd like to do is ask each of you, now knowing what you know as experts in nutrition and lifestyle, and you've personally seen how these choices people have made in their lives can dramatically affect their own chronic diseases and risk for them. I'm curious what lifestyle choices each of you have made as far as, you know, diet, exercise, or even supplements or tools that you use to monitor these things.
I'll start here. I've been interested in health and nutrition for a very long time. Most people look at me and say, what? You do what? So I do OMAD. I do one meal a day for the most part. Sometimes I forget, actually, and I miss a day. And that just blows people away that I don't have a hunger craving. But at the same time, I haven't fluctuated in weight in 20 plus years, practically. I've pretty much stayed exactly the same, which I think is a very good marker for metabolic health. Plus, there's youthfulness and skin and vitality and energy and all the other things that come along with it. So that's one thing, OMAD, or at least long intermittent fasting. I do that, and I've done that for years. I think the longest fast I've done is 5 days. I think we had a challenge at SimpleX. But I usually do 24 hours. And then I encourage others at least to push it together to 16 hours or 18 hours or some amount of time to let the body just heal and recover and get the insulin down. The other thing is, if it doesn't look like food, I don't eat it. If it comes in a bag, it's processed, the ingredients don't sound like food, it doesn't look like food to me, I might as well eat Clorox. Both of them have calories, but it's not food. So I practice what I preach. I eat whole foods and I eat them in specific times to the amount I need, and I maintain a metabolic health. So in 20 years, it's panned out. I'm not dying. I'm not emaciating away. I'm not fighting my cravings every day. I just live life. I don't think about food. It's actually easier. My food doesn't run my life. Yeah. I pick when I need to eat. And if there's no healthy food around, I won't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I switched to one meal a day about a year ago, and it's transformed my life. It's great. And you've been doing it even longer, it sounds like, for a long time, Avi. How about any supplements or any drugs, metformin, rapamycin, any of those things?
Yeah, I haven't gone that route. Statins have shown to do some increase in longevity, you know, especially if there are certain risk factors, you know, familial hyperlipidemia, et cetera. I'm a big believer in fish oil only because we have such an imbalance of omega-6 to omega-3s. And then red rice yeast, I think, is a great way to moderate lipids with a natural statin, so to speak. So those are my go-tos for metabolic hyperlipidemia, specifically given that I have a history in my family of familial hypercholesterolemia.
And you mentioned earlier your fasting insulin is under one.
Yeah. It's a one point. It's 0.9 or something. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, David, as CEO of Simplex Health, how do you lead by example in your lifestyle choices?
So, you know, some people have said like some of the best advice would be eat like a diabetic, you know, should. So I do follow that, and not according to the ADA standards by any means. But, you know, for me, I went all in. I didn't negotiate essentially with, you know, with wanting to reverse this condition. I was motivated to get off the medication. It worked for me. So that diagnosis happened in 2012. And by right at the end of 2013, I had eliminated that. So for me, that was enough of what I needed in order to make that permanent change. And I had just entirely shifted my mind around that I just, you know, was going to do everything I could to be around as long as I could for my family. So I don't negotiate. But from a practical side, I'm an OMAD guy as well too. I've been an OMAD guy for at least, I mean, it's got to be minimally 7 years now. I think I started my journey following like a Whole30 paleo template for the most part. And, you know, just got into the quality of foods matters in this house, big time. But now I'm just at a point, just kind of like Avi, it's like, you know, I don't have to think about food all day. It's easy. But you know, but yeah, so I'm an OMAD person and I advocate for it every once in a while. Like Avi said, we'll do some, you know, we'll do some in-house challenges with our team just so they can experience what we recommend, you know, our patients do, which is kind of press those limits, that autophagy, that benefit there. So we're very interested in that process as well too. So, but yeah, so practically I'm an OMAD guy daily.
Yeah, the I love what you said, Avi, too, about it. If it doesn't look like food, don't eat it. And and both of you being the OMAD guys, maybe you can tell me your thoughts on this. But since I started doing one meal a day, I have to say, by the time that meal comes around, I've never tasted anything more delicious. My wife can put out a bowl of celery for me, and it's the best thing. Well, it's the best thing I've had all day. But it tastes, everything tastes so good that way. But
yeah,
it's also that it's healthy, real food. And it, and you know, while we have the ability to spice things and add, you know, and cook things, and that's great. And, you know, we have a great palate and it's good to enjoy life. There's healthy ways to do that. And by waiting for your body to need that nutrition, it's a double win. You're getting good food while needing it at that moment, because you now have need to restock your nutritional supply, as opposed to, you know, having eaten all day and really don't need to eat anymore for another year.
So, and also, I guess too, for us, and at least in this household, you know, we do a decent amount. We have a decent amount of patients that have some autoimmunity. And so that's an area of focus for us. So when we're following, you know, and looking at the you know, the three-legged stool or the environmental triggers, you know, we obviously are looking at, you know, some of the foods that we're eating that just have a high association rate. So in our household, just because there's some autoimmunity, we also avoid, you know, casein and gluten across the entire household in general, and most soys as well too.
And seed oils, we didn't talk about that. What's your position on seed oils?
Most of them are high in omega-6s rather than omega-3s. Stick to the olive oils and the other high omega-3 oils. They're you know, the seed oils are pro-inflammatory for the most part. Yep.
Well, thanks so much for everything. What's the best way for our listeners to follow you on social media? Or we're going to have the website on the show notes, but maybe you could tell them how to follow you.
Yeah. So our website, obviously, that'll be posted, simplexhealth.com, but LinkedIn, you know, we're sharing patient success stories and, you know, what we're up to, you know, on a weekly basis over there. So that would be the best social channel, I think, to find us.
Great. Well, thanks again. I'm excited about Simplex Health. Actually, I just got an email. I was on the waiting list and I've just been accepted. So I'm going to be joining myself, I think, and trying it out. All right. So thanks so much for spending time. It was great to spend an hour with you guys today, and I appreciate hearing all about the great things you're doing, and can't wait to hear about it in the future as well.
Thanks for having us on the summit. Yep. Appreciate all the work you're doing as well.
Yep. Thank you, Robert.
Note, this is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking of it because of something you have seen here. If you find this to be of value of you, please hit that like button and subscribe to support the work we do on this channel. Also, we take your suggestions and advice very seriously. Please let us know what you'd like to see on this channel. Thanks for watching, and we'll hope to see you next time.